Welcome to the Sound on Sound People and Music Industry podcast channel with me, Kevin Paul. In this episode, I talk to Dave McCracken about his approach to production and how to get the best out of the artist when producing in the studio. I hope you enjoy the episode. Dave, welcome. How are you?
Good, Kevin. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Great to be here. Let's talk about some of those new bands that you're working with.
All right.
What's the sort of situation with that?
Well, I just wanted to try and do something a bit different. So I just started going out and going to gigs, and I got really excited by all the new bands that were sort of coming out in a scene which was really exciting, because on radio it was just all hip-hop and grime, but there was like this really healthy buzz of new bands. Like, it stems from, like, say, Fat White Family, through to, like, sort of, like, Fontaine's DC. There's, like, there's a new sort of thing coming out. And so I just started going out, going to gigs, and I loved what I heard. So what I tried to do was help them, work with them, help them develop, help them understand what they need to do in order to sharpen their tools in their boxes.
Yeah, sure.
And just do EPs and records with all these new bands. And I've loved it. Loved every moment. It's so different, so different.
In what way is it different to you?
Well, basically, before that, I was sort of like living in New York, working on a lot of hip-hop, signed to Roc Nation. Yeah. It was basically me in a room on my own 24 hours a day. And a rapper would pop in every now and again and then leave. And it got really, really lonely.
Right.
And kind of boring. Yeah. So I said, I want to be in a room full of kids. When you haven't got an idea, you look around and there's five people looking at you with better ideas that you've got.
Yeah.
And that excites me. And it's about that for me. It's about how the room is excited before you record.
That thing of being in the room with people, that community.
Yeah.
Yeah, that community of five people.
Yeah.
That's how a lot of those great records that we love were made, right?
Yeah.
And the hip-hop thing, while obviously hip-hop is I'm a huge fan of hip-hop.
Same, mate, I'm a massive fan.
You know, but the production approach is very different, as you said.
100%.
You know, and I can understand how
There is moments in the hip-hop world where when they show up and they come and do their rhymes and do their lines and do their bars, and there's a full gang in the studio, it's electric. It's incredible.
Yeah, yeah.
But that lasts for about an hour, and then you're back on your own for another 8 hours looking at kick drums.
So you just thought, you know what, I'm just going to go and find some bands and start making records.
Yeah, yeah.
Wicked, wicked. Are you helping them with being signed or...
I've got a lot of friends, and we all help each other out, you know. And but it's something that I think I'm going to try and look into doing. It's setting some infrastructure so I can be like a one-stop shop, really.
Wow.
I'm just really interested in getting in early with these bands and not telling them that they're wrong and sending them around the world writing with all the best songwriters in the world.
Yeah.
You're sort of sitting with them and nurturing them, because they've got the tools. You don't have to do it for them. You've just got to help them.
Yeah.
Where in the world I was in when I was living in New York, of course we're doing great songs. I've got like Bruno Mars in the room. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's like John Legend. I've got all they're amazing.
Of course.
But when a young kid comes out and he looks at me and he's singing John Legend's words, it just isn't the same.
Yeah.
Because I come from an indie background and a bit more alternative background.
Yeah.
When someone says something, I want to feel it rather than just say, oh, it's pretty.
Yeah.
That's the thing I've went back into bands for. Whatever they need, it can be anything.
Yeah.
I can tune guitars or do beats.
You'd rather do the guitars?
Well, any other one.
Or both, yeah.
Anything they want.
Yeah.
Coffee, lemon chicken pasta, whatever they want. Whatever they want, back scratch.
That's a great name for a label, actually, First Release.
Yeah, it absolutely is, First Release.
Well, let's talk about, like, your musical background. You mentioned there that you're from indie.
sort of background. Yeah. Is that correct? Is that how did what's your sort of your route to the studio?
Well, my roots to the studio, basically, well, when I was growing up, I was just obsessed with Depeche Mode.
Yeah.
So I got into music through them and learning all their songs. And then I just sort of fell into it, really. It's like...
How did that happen?
I was working for Steinberg.
Yeah.
Cubase, VST, when that first came out.
Yeah.
The first time MIDI and audio... came together.
Cubase Audio.
And it didn't work. Basically, I was head of technical support for Cubase. So there was a few, like, big clients, and I just got friendly with them, and then I got asked to a friend of mine who was looking after him. It was called Mark Seyfritz. He was Goldie's programmer on the drum and bass scene on the infamous second album, Opus.
Oh, yeah.
And he called me in to help. So that was the first thing I sort of did. I was working on that crazy...
As a programmer?
Yeah. Helping out, programming, just doing whatever we needed to do. And I always remember we did it down at Ridge Farm.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the residential.
Yeah. And we did it on a SSL J series. And there was one song he had called Mother. And it was a 45 drum and bass opus. If you can imagine that. And he wouldn't let us, the engineer and everybody, they wanted to do it as a 45-minute piece.
Yeah.
J-Series was maybe a few months old. They'd only tested it running automation for 10 minutes.
Okay.
So 7 days into the mix, the computer crashed and started deleting all the automation channels.
Helpful.
So we didn't know...
So it wasn't just Steinberg.
So we didn't know whether to knock the desk off, because sometimes when you knock the desk off, you can blow it.
Yeah, yeah, of course. Yeah.
Or just knock the computer off, which was a bit scary too. I don't know how we fixed it, but we only lost 10 channels.
Okay.
Which was the effects return at the end of the desk. Oh. So that was all right, but... And drum and bass is kind of intense. It wasn't just sort of basic automation.
Yeah, I've worked with Goldie in the studio.
He's amazing.
Yeah. The energy, it's unbelievable. The energy,
the energy he brings.
That thing that you were talking about.
What I want to do with bands, exactly that. The thing is about producing, right, you don't have to sit there and physically do everything, right? Yeah. For me, you've just got to make sure that room is electric.
Yeah.
And people are thinking of things that they've never thought of before.
Yeah.
And it, and then all you've got to do is put a few mics up and record it. Because if you've got the room buzzing, anything's going to be brilliant.
Yeah, that's
and that's
true.
What Goldie was great at. He made everyone in the room feel 10 foot tall.
Yeah.
And everybody went out that extra 100% for him.
Did you have the aspiration when you were at Steinberg?
I was just going with it.
Yeah.
I was just going.
Very laid back.
Mate, I'm a welder from Cumbria. I used to weld nuclear flasks.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I'm a fully classified, trained nuclear flask welder.
Well, if I ever need a nuclear flask welder.
Yeah, I actually burn a bit hotter than everyone else because I'm a bit nuclear. So I didn't have any aspirations. I was just like, I am where I'm at. I'm not where I'm from. I am where I'm at. And whatever comes, I'm going to have a go.
Yeah.
That's how I met Ian Brown.
Oh, really? Tell me more about that.
Well, basically, Ian booked himself into a studio in Sam. It was 99.
Yeah.
And I was working a lot with Trevor Horn at that time, to playing all the keyboards and doing beats and stuff for him. So I was always in Sam.
Yeah.
And I met Ian, and he came in with two ideas on an 8-track, the Fostex R8.
Yeah, yeah.
And... he needed 10 songs and we had 6 weeks to do it because he wanted it out before the year 2000. And I met him in March, and after a week, he told me I was meant to be just programming and playing keyboards. But after a week, he told me I was producing and I was in his band. And then that's it.
Fantastic. What a great story.
And then I was with him for 3 years after that. Did 3 albums with him.
I mean, that's not unusual. I just do something on the session and someone takes a liking to you and that's it. You're off. You're in.
Yeah.
You're doing your thing. So many people think the role of the producer is just to sit there tell people what to do.
No. First thing you've got to do before you tell anyone what to do is listen to everyone.
Right, okay. Can you explain more about that process? That
well, basically, you know what I mean? You talk about the songs. You talk about what the songs mean. You hear everyone's take on it. And then you set up a few goals and things that we need to do that should fulfill everyone's needs.
How do you approach
that? You just sit and listen and I get to know people. Right. And when you get to know people, you find out how they want to express themselves. And then just, if they want to get from A to B, and there's four people that want to get from A to B and they've all got different visions, you sort of just make a toll bridge and just get them all to come to one.
Right. Are you like a conduit?
Yeah, I try to be as objective as possible. But if someone does something great and they don't agree, I'll go to war with them to keep it because them moments, you know what it's like in the studio.
Yeah, of course.
You can be playing that guitar part over and over and over and over and then the guitar string snaps. And something happens.
Yeah.
And that becomes the loop.
That's the loop, yeah.
You know what I mean? It's them moments. It's them moments that I really live for. I remember when I was working on Playing the Angel with Ben Hillier, Depeche.
Yeah.
And because it's all programmed and it's all modular and it's all MIDI, he used to do this amazing thing where he used to get us all sitting up and rather than it being all synced, everybody just sort of pressed play when they wanted on the sequences.
Okay. And just join in.
And it ran away with itself.
Yeah.
But I'm telling you, there was a few moments about 16 minutes into the jam that it was doing something that computers shouldn't be doing. It was like Sly and the Family Stone. It was brilliant. And all we did...
Take those 3 minutes out or whatever.
That's the song. It's really hard to make machines jam with each other.
Yeah, but that's a great way to do
it. That's how Ben described it to us. It was, it was like, how do you make machines not think about the one? And zero.
Well, it's interesting you say that because one of the things that in this series, speaking with a lot of producers from, let's say, a live background here, but how different is it when you're working with MIDI? Because there isn't that spontaneity that you've just described. There's no guitar string snapping.
No.
I mean, maybe in years gone by, machines wouldn't work properly.
Which gave it a thing. It's like with the old MPCs and the SPs.
Yeah.
They couldn't handle the MIDI information.
Yeah. So they'd jam up or...
No, they just prioritise. So always A1 would trigger before A2.
Yeah.
So your kick drum always went on A1.
Yeah.
And your snare went on A2.
That's right.
And then your hat went on A3 and they always hit a slight behind. So that's how you got that
How you got the shuffle. Yeah, because of the note information.
And that's from a mistake.
Very interesting.
You know what I mean? That's what's interesting for me.
How do you create that? That jam machine? How do you create that
Basically, I tend not to put swing and stuff on there. So I mainly work, when I'm doing grooves, I mainly work with velocities and attack of the sample.
Okay.
So using the attack of the sample, you can make it drag or have it really tight.
Yeah, yeah.
And it all depends what sort of stuff you're doing, you know what I mean? It's like, I remember with Mark Bell on Exciter, which is a totally different sound in Depeche Mode album.
Yeah, very laid back, very chilled out.
Very Bjork-esque, and how he used to do it, everything was clinical. So if there was a sample played and another sample came in, that sample would be edited out from that point. So everything's hitting clean air.
Yeah.
So that's how you get that sort of bachelorette, sort of that crusty, that...
Yeah, yeah.
And that's another approach. And he did some mad stuff when I was working with him. He did this amazing thing with this chord pad. He wanted to make it glitch. So he ran the full 3 minutes of the chord onto a CDR, burnt it to a CDR, got a razor blade, cut all the CDR, put it back in and ran it back in. And it was just...
And that created all...
It just clicks and plops everywhere, but you heard the chords underneath.
Amazing.
I was blown away, absolute blown away. He was a little scientist, that dude.
Right.
Mark Bell, legend, absolute amazing.
Having not sort of come from the traditional tape-op route.
I don't know anything, so I'm all self-taught.
Where did you? So did you just learn that by just watching and trying and
just being in sessions?
Yeah, you know, and just having that.
I've just been really lucky. I've just worked with some amazing people. That's it. Simple as that. I've worked with Floyd, Steve Osborne, Steve Fitzmaurice, Trevor Horn, Bob Clearmountain. I've worked with so many people that I just don't take my eyes off them. But I've never actually sat down and been taught anything.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think many people...
I don't even know how to use a patch bay.
Come on.
No, I really don't. It just doesn't make any sense to us.
Well, I mean, if you want, I can show you.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll take you up on that bit.
So many people go to universities and colleges now.
Yeah.
And they're taught how to use equipment. But the number one question I'm always asked by people is, well, how do you do that? How are you doing that? And I'm like, well, it doesn't matter how I'm doing it. How are you doing it?
Yeah.
And you say that you haven't been taught, but these guys have been taught, but you've obviously got a very inquisitive mind.
Yeah. I know what sounds make people excited once I've talked to them. So okay. It's all about how I make that room sound so they're excited. Make sure when people show up in the studio, they're on point, they know what the record's about, and everyone's walking down the same path.
Where did you learn that approach from?
Probably everyone I work, like Trevor Horn's amazing at it.
Yeah.
Ben Hilly is
amazing. You just literally just absorb it.
It's, to be honest, out of everyone who's great, who I've worked with, everyone's different. The common thing is they always make the room feel great.
Leave room for the magic to come into the room.
Don't have the answers.
Yeah.
Just sort of know which sort of direction you're going.
Yeah.
And don't be, you know what I mean? I hate them sessions where you show up. I do these writing sessions sometimes and they don't even know any lyrics that they're going to sing. And they'll go, I'll just make a little vibe, right? So I'll get my drum machine up and I put a kick drum on. And the first thing they say to me is, oh, I don't like that kick drum. And what I say to them, of course, oh, you don't like the kick drum? Well, I don't like any of your words because you haven't got any. You know what I mean? It's ridiculous to sort of pull someone up on a tiny little detail. It's like, imagine you want to write the best song in the world.
Yeah.
But you only can use things that would fit in a matchbox. How are you going to do that?
Yeah.
You put yourself in a box before you've even started. First thing I love to do is just free people. And just go in a direction. It doesn't have to be perfect.
Yeah.
If it's perfect, it's a fluke.
Yeah. It's luck. It's pure luck.
Pure luck. And that happens.
And that's great. Yeah.
I've had them moments.
Yeah.
But also I've had the moments where no one's believed in a song and I've had to present it four times until people got it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like the Beyonce song I did. That was 3 years old, done with a different artist. And just by chance, she heard it.
How did that come about then? How did you end up working with arguably one of the biggest artists?
It was just one of them things. I was working with an artist called Hugo, and I'd written a song with my songwriting partner, Amanda Ghost.
Okay.
We'd written this song, and it was a great song, and 3 years went by, and Amanda was in New York. She'd just written You're Beautiful for James Blunt.
Yeah.
And she was having a meeting with Beyonce and she played Beyonce the song. She loved it. So Amanda phoned me at 11 o'clock at night saying, Beyonce loves the song. She wants to cut it in 3 hours. But at the moment, it doesn't sound like an R&B song. I'm like, all right. So I ran back to the studio, did the roughest demo I could. And then, I got it. And then I flew to New York the following day to record her vocals, and I ended up getting two songs in that album.
Yeah, I noticed
that. And that girl, I've never seen anything like it. Out of anyone in my whole career, no one works harder than her. Like, seriously.
The reason
why she's so successful is someone with that talent who works that hard, she's unstoppable. We were in Rock the Mic in New York, and there was Pharrell, Timbaland, Stargate, Tricky and Dream, like all the A-list producers, right? And in a period of 4 weeks, she cut, she wrote recorded and finished 70 songs.
Wow.
In 4 weeks.
That's a hell of a lot of output.
She did that. But she had a crew of, you know what I mean? Basically, you were lucky if you got 3 days in there as a producer, because right. There was that many producers trying to get on it. And I got 2 songs on it. Nuclear Welder. Nuclear Welder on Beyonce. Brilliant.
Bands can be nervous going to the studio, especially bands that maybe haven't been in the studio before or have little experience. Yeah. And you might have touched upon it already. How do you sort of make them? I mean, I know you talk to them and stuff like that.
That's
how
it.
Do you? You just talk to them. So that's your trick, is it?
Well, it isn't a trick. It's just get to know them.
Yeah,
just a little bit. Like, yeah, I have a theory and have a way to get stuff done quick and efficient, and you nail it because. Yeah. As an engineer and a producer, at the end of the day,
your job
is to turn something in, even if the world is falling out around you,
yeah.
And there's fire coming up, and there's a dragon coming up from the kitchen.
Yeah,
that's the true world of being a producer. It isn't about the correct way to do it.
Yeah,
every single project I've done, I've always picked the perfect mic for the drums. It doesn't work. You know what I mean? So you've got to think of somewhere else. It's about thinking on your feet. What can you do? I want to go over there. That's the perfect mic to go due east, but it doesn't work. Oh, I've got some mics that go due west, it doesn't work. Oh, but if we roll all the top off them AKGs,
yeah.
It sort of sounds similar. You know, it's that I love.
Fast thinking.
Just problem solving.
Yeah.
Getting it over the finish line.
Well, the role of producer is as much as
and,
it is.
And it's always my fault. It's never anyone else's fault. If someone blows it out, it's fine. Don't worry about it. I've got it. It's my job. Just enjoy yourself.
A deflector.
Yeah, just anything you're worrying about. I've got a big...
Shoulder.
I've got just one shoulder. Your left shoulder's really big. Just put it on my left shoulder. Not my right, just my left. Be brilliant.
Do you do a lot of lyric writing?
Yep, whatever they need.
Yeah?
Whatever they need. If they want me to do it all, I'll do it all. If they want me just to do the kick drums, I can do that.
How do you approach writing lyrics? Because...
You get it through their point of view, so you get them to think about things and get them to describe it back to you, and then they tell you it as they're talking to you. I'll get them to describe a feeling of helplessness, but it's got a positive twist that comes into the chorus, like blah 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 blah.
Yeah.
So you get them to talk about, like, what would you feel like if you were helpless, like. Who would you call? You know what I mean? And then they sort of, they give you they give you a palette, what feels real. Do you know what I mean? They use certain words. Everyone does. Everyone uses certain words a lot. I say amazing or awesome a lot. I don't know why. I just like it. Especially with my accent, which I shouldn't say.
Amazing.
Amazing. You know, it's awesome. Brilliant. So you get their sort of palette and then you sort of just, try and tell a simple story as possible.
That's it.
That's it.
Fantastic.
That's all I do.
Is there like a process or a piece of equipment or a plugin that you use or try to use or is your go-to on every session, every song?
Well, there's things I like. You know what I mean? It's like I love all the UAD stuff. I think it's absolutely killer.
Yeah.
So like my favourite little chain in there is... You know what I mean? It's like if I had the outboard, it'd be the same. I just love the Neve channel. I love the LA2A channel.
Yeah.
Just simple things like that. I think the new RCA, the Capitol Chamber, is incredible. I don't know how they've done that.
I noticed you had a picture on your Insta of a mixer? A little RCA?
Yes, that's my friend's.
What's that?
It's an old radio 6x2
that looked awesome.
Mixer.
That looked really, really cool.
I've got some pictures. They all opened it up and it's all been refixed and stuff.
Right.
It's my friend Aaron Horn Studio, and he's got some great gear.
I noticed another picture in your Insta of a slide.
There's a studio down in Ramsgate called Big Jelly Studios.
I might have heard.
And it's awesome. You just rock up, you stay there, you can sleep there. Like,
yeah.
It's this old chapel, right? they've got great mics, the people are lovely, and they give you the keys, and it's like your place for 2 weeks.
Amazing, fantastic.
But it's sort of, the studio is a bit like Abbey Road, there's a mezzanine up.
Yeah.
So it's like a chapel.
Studio 2, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So you go up the stairs to the control room,
yeah,
and then you come down on the slide.
Oh.
The best story about it is that the guy who owns it, Mike, he got that excited when he got the slide in. And basically, there's no runoff. It's like it ends in the wall, right? So there's this little clever thing you've got to do to get off it. But he didn't think about that. And when he got it, he goes, oh, slide, great. So he pledged it up. So he got the polish up, polished all the slide, right? Went down, sprained his ankle. Sometimes in studios, do you know what's really hard? When you're with a band, to go in the studio for one day and cut a song.
Yeah.
Really hard.
Yeah.
Especially when you've got to sort of reinvent it and sort of get the thing of what it is.
Mm.
But Big Jelly's great. It's like, it's reasonably priced. It's really friendly. All the gear is great. And you just sort of make a mess.
Yeah.
Plug a load of things in. And like when I was in there doing Swim Deep, I think I didn't get the drums out. Like I did loads of other things, but it took me 3 days to be happy with the drum sound.
Yeah.
I'd recorded maybe 4 songs with drums, but I got it best on like the 3rd day. So I just went back and recorded it again.
What's your thing on quantization of live performances?
Just depends who they are, what bands.
Yeah. You just literally take it as a track by track.
It all depends what it is and what's the objective.
Yeah. You come back to that again, don't you? Yeah.
That's I find it's weird. You know what I mean? It's like 6 music's cool if you don't quantize it because it's sort of that thing. To hear unquantized music on Radio 1 is kind of weird.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? Yes. It's like, where is it? Is it Radio 1, Radio 2, 6 music? Is it for Northern of them? And then we won't put any drummers on and we'll sing backwards.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just whatever you need, really.
Yeah.
Like, what do I try and... Let me think about it. That's actually a really good question.
Because everyone talks about what they do. I want to know what you try not to do. It doesn't have to be a process. Could be train of thought. Could be an environment thing.
I sort of do anything because, you know what I mean? I've worked with basically drum and bit, Goldie, Ian Brown.
Yeah.
Depeche Mode, Beyonce, Kanye West. You know what I mean? It's like... Everything's so different I work on. I can't work with Kanye like I do with Beyonce. I can't work with Beyonce like I do with Depeche Mode.
Yeah.
So I haven't really got anything that I don't try.
So maybe you try not to rule anything out.
I always try and keep an open mind. You know what? The only thing I don't like in studios is when people start macro producing, where you're in a studio and it isn't even mixed. And no one really truly knows how true the sound is. And then people start telling you to do an 1/8 tweak on a filter that only bats can hear.
Yeah.
I don't like doing stuff like that because it's all up just about their ego. You know what I mean? It's not to do with the right sound or not.
Yeah.
It's just that's the alpha person in the room.
Yeah.
He just needs to do that. I normally try and get him to make dinner and get all that stuff done before he comes back. Why do you want to do that? Sounds great. There's no rules. There really isn't any rules.
Try not to rule anything out.
Whatever sparks someone or whatever gives anyone a bit of internal light, whatever that is.
You leave space for that, do you?
Always.
Yeah.
It's got to come from them, never from me. It's not me.
Yeah, sure.
Because they don't, what I find, especially with the artists, if you don't support them and let them do it, I can do it. Simple. But it's way better if they do it. It really is.
Yeah. Dave, it's been absolutely fantastic catching up with you after all these years. I really appreciate you taking the time to see me.
Anytime, mate.
And I'll speak to you soon.
Awesome.
Thank you for listening. And be sure to check out the show notes page for this episode where you'll find further information along with web links and details of all our other episodes. And just before you go, let me point you to the SoundOnSound.com/podcasts website page where you can explore what's playing on our other channels. This has been a Mixed Bus production by me, Kevin Paul, for Sound on Sound.
Why not check out our other podcast channels? This month on our recording and mixing channel, sound designer Eddie Bazil enhances a variety of individual tracks and full mixes with plugins to achieve the retro warmth and cohesion of tapes and valves.
Plus on our electronic music channel, composer, pianist and producer Martin Kohlstedt talks to Caro C about his approach to combining piano and electronic instruments.